Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody, to our little podcast here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us on the web at www.njrevolutionradio.com. If you would like to help us out by letting us know about an event you're sponsoring in the area, or if you want to bring another story to the news, you can contact us at info@njrevolutionradio.com as well. Today, I am joined by Cora Santaguida. She is the national co-chair for the Ballot Access Committee of the Green Party, and she is also the co-chair of the Fairfield County Greens, which is located just slightly to our north and a little bit over to the left, literally and figuratively, over to the left in Connecticut. Cora, thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. So how long have you been involved with the Greens, and how did you come to find your place in this national committee and leading in your county chapter as well?
Well, you kind of, actually, it's kind of a funny story. Well, to me and close friends, it's funny. Most women remember, like, the moment that they're proposed to, like, marriage. I remember, like, the exact moment and setting when a former Green asked me to run for office. I remember, like, where we were standing in Danbury, what he said, and that was in 2012. And that year I ran for Board of Education in Stanford, and I had also run for that office again in 2014. And this year actually is my sixth time running for office. I ran for Board of Ed, like I said, Board of Representatives, State Senate, Constable. And as far as where I am today, becoming a co-chair of the Ballot Access Committee, I was state coordinator for Jill Stein and Jaume Baraka's 2016 presidential race. Wow. And that's kind of how I got noticed. And that kind of started with organizing a pretty big ballot access rally for Jill in Connecticut, and then helping out with a campus tour in the state, and it kind of just built up from there. And then I was recruited to run for the Ballot Access Committee. And as far as my chapter goes, we're kind of a small chapter. We're trying to grow. But Connecticut, in general, we're pretty fortunate. We hold over 20 ballot lines. And I know ballot access, of course, is a huge issue in many states.
Yes.
So for us to hold over 20 is quite an achievement.
Let's talk about how ballot access works and how it differs from state to state. I'll be honest with you, I haven't been always as involved with electoral stuff on with the Green Party as I have with other areas of the party. What does ballot access require of Connecticut? Do you know what that equals as far as national ballot access, and what is it, a higher burden? Is are you working on better ballot access laws?
Well, I will say that what got me involved nationally to begin with, the state coordinator stuff, was because our state had met with a lawyer to discuss language on a petition sheet and the laws and rules governing petitioners and what can get us signatures, stricken off by Secretary of State. And what I heard intrigued me and infuriated me. My biggest gripe is that there's no uniform process for ballot access. So when you have no uniform process, there's no uniform appeal process. And of course, that's done on purpose. So in Connecticut, for president and for U.S. Senate, and other, federal state, offices, it's governor, it's 7,500 valid signatures for just those offices. So if we wanted to run somebody for governor, this year, it would be the same petition drive as we had to launch for Jill Stein. And in 2012, we missed the mark, 2016, we did get on the ballot. But other offices, you may have, like for Congress, it's somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000. And then as you get lower and lower, some districts could be 100 signatures, but then like Stanford Board of Education is ridiculous. And
what was it for the BOE in Stanford?
Actually, I don't know the exact number, but it was actually higher than Board of Representatives, like in one community over. So
in Congress here, so I'll give you an example. I can give you an example. I know what Congress and Senate runs, governors runs. So governors here in New Jersey, governors and Senate runs require 800 signatures. Mm-hmm. The Congress requires 100. You know, we always shoot for more. So you know, you run for Congress, maybe we'll get 400 or so, something like that, you know. But how does that compare, do you think, to the net? Is that better or worse? And if we could get a uniform situation going on where it's a little easier to manage and more transparent, because I think all this lunacy with different voting laws and different voting booths and some people voting on paper and flipping coins at caucuses sometimes. I mean, you know, how much more ridiculous can you get when you're trying to manage a society, right? So if we were to streamline this and come up with a better system that was uniform around the United States, what would that look like to you? I mean, how do we put forward a platform item it would be, huh?
You know, there are efforts out there that are trying to get things a little more uniform. I mean, as far as what it would look like, okay, so let's say third political parties, you know, we'd have to start with getting ballot access straight across, because we have states that, you know, if you collect so many amount of signatures, you have ballot access from dog catcher to president of the United States.
Right.
Then you have other states that go by voter percentage. So again, we'd have to pick a way to uniform us. And all of it, yes, is a way to hold us down. I mean, think about when we collect signatures, and I'm sure you've come up against this, you know, as far as how many like raw signatures you have to collect. So here, in more urban areas and poorer communities, we have to collect a great deal more signatures than we would in, you know, small towns or, you know, areas that have a lot less people of color. And that's a whole different topic, but, you know, you can, like, I know around Connecticut, it's kind of like, okay, if we're in Bridgeport, okay, we really got to up those signatures, but yeah, we don't really need to worry about it in Greenwich or New Canaan. And that's awful. And I hope that we get to a place, along with voter rights and fair elections, that we can get beyond that. Because it's just disgraceful to me.
Yes, it is. Now, you've had a breadth of work here. You know, I asked you where you started out, but you certainly have done a lot more than where you started out. Both on a local and a national issue. We spoke a little bit beforehand and we were relaying information about housing justice work. I know that there's been some campaigns around the country, and we've had a great campaign, the AMP Slate, that ran in Newark, New Jersey, which was three Greens, were housing justice advocates. What did you do in Connecticut as far as that issue is concerned, and what role does that play in to politics?
Well, I am formerly homeless, and I was actually homeless twice, 2010 for about a year, and then again in 2014 for about a year. And, you know, really here, I mean, in 2012, I paid a lot of attention to what Sherry Honkola was doing and still does and has done for over 20 years. And also in 2016, I followed a lot of what was going on in Baltimore. I know that Margaret Flowers, of course, Sherry Honkola, our vice presidential candidate, were, you know, addressing the issue down there. And I think they're also for lieutenant governor. They have a housing activist running for that office for lieutenant governor. But in Connecticut, really what's kind of going on and what I'm confused about and what I'm trying to figure out is they're saying that there's a decline in homelessness in the state, while individual towns are going up. And they're also saying that people who are chronically homeless, which means people who are living with a disability, who have been homeless for either an entire calendar year, or have had, I think it's 3 or 4 bouts of homelessness within a 3-year period, something like that. They keep changing the rules. They're saying, oh, they're in the process of getting housing. But really what's going on is that these people, whether they're chronically homeless or temporarily homeless, they get shifted from one temporary situation to another. And really that's not remedying the problem. It's only perpetuating it. So what I'm trying to do is advocate for more permanent or at least semi-permanent housing. I'd like to see our below market rate program be improved and kind of tweak things a little bit, because right now, if in Stamford, which is where I live, if they build a new development, new apartment building, only 10% of those units can be used for below market rate. And if a developer does not want low-income tenants or residents, they could pay some sort of in-lieu fee, which means, like, yeah, we don't want you in our building, but we're gonna donate money, you know, to another project. And
that's insane.
It is, and it's awful.
What's wrong with these people?
Yeah, they actually the zoning board in Stamford just approved the demolition of a low-income tower to put up another luxury building with a fire pit, an outdoor dog washing station, and a yoga studio.
So what we're talking about here is something that we're seeing here in New Jersey and around the country as the 1% employ, you know, the same monetary strategies that continue to accumulate wealth for themselves. And this is gentrification, you know, all over our country now at this point.
Sure.
You know, it's a model. It's like, hey, this is how to screw over people who aren't white and make a whole lot of money and provide more white spaces for people. It's pretty sickening. And hearing the reports back through the Green Party and people dealing with these situations gives you a perspective that should be alarming to most people in our country. That we're continuing to squeeze out people who need to be brought into society and into, you know, the solutions that need to take place. As far as solutions go for housing justice, you know, what is, I know you've done some work. What is the solution? Or is it so much as doing material support on the ground where you're trying to gather up neighborhoods, or is it more political work where you're looking into legislative activity that can support those communities?
Well, I know one thing, and Stamford isn't working on this because there really is no land to be had, but chapters further up north are looking at land trusts. And that's another option that could, you know, possibly turn into some affordable housing. But really, you know, homelessness is, and we talked about this before, you know, is not a one-topic issue. So, for example, I am a big advocate for state public banking. Of course, nobody wants to hear that in Connecticut, especially lower Connecticut. We have so many corporations housed here in Stamford, including the big, you know, Purdue Pharma. Don't even get me started on the opioids. But
the state banking thing is caught on here in New Jersey. The Democrats are into it because Phil Murphy ran. I mean, he's screwing it all up. He's not going to do the right thing and make it about the people. It seems like it's going to be a capitalist organization with a state front group, basically. I guess what you would refer to as state capitalism, you know, where private investors are managing public money. And that's not exactly what a state bank is supposed to be.
That is not public banking at all. And, you know, localizing the economy in general, you know, getting our money back in our hands. I know a big problem we have here in Stanford is that they cater to out-of-towners. So yeah, they spend their money here, but it leaves just as quickly as it came in. And with these huge luxury buildings that they're putting up, they're putting retail space on the bottom floors that just stays empty. So, you know, a localized economy, more co-op owned opportunities, co-op employment, you know, for now, you know, making better use of our credit unions, you know, that's a start. Right. Getting money out of, you know, big banks and putting it, you know, more locally. Now, Green Party of Connecticut has, we do have a legislative agenda, and we've been pushing for public banking. In fact, our candidate running for state comptroller this year, Ed Heflin, is a big proponent for state public banking. So we're hoping to get some traction with that this year.
All right. Well, it's good to know. And public banking has been around the Green Party as long as I've been around the Green Party, which going back about maybe 5 years or so. You know, so I know it kind of, it has roots here, and I think we should keep rooting it on and, but pay attention closely to the models that are being employed as it starts to catch on. Because you'll just see a bunch of banking executives be like, oh, I could do that for money. And all of a sudden, you know, the whole thing just turns into a ridiculously big slush fund, basically.
And, and the rent here is so high that once upon a time, if you walked down Bedford Street, which looks like a mini, I don't even know what, like Soho or something, with all these rich bars. Once upon a time, you know, you'd see a family-owned hardware store. That is no longer heard
of. No, they're gone, man. Amazon.
And
Walmart started it, and Amazon put the final nail in that coffin, man.
Yeah, and the restaurants that are there and bars and things like that and whatever little shops may be there, most people in this area cannot afford to frequent them, at least often, or even half the time, or not at all. And the people who are serving you your food are going home to the shelter at night. I know of at least three people that are waiters in these restaurants, and then they go home to the men's shelter. And then a block away, there's a park. A block away from this strip, there are people sleeping outside.
So this leads us into the larger thing going on in the Green Party. And I'll admit to you, Cora, I'm a New Jersey guy, done most of my work in New Jersey here. And so I feel like I'm not an expert on what's going on around the country. So, but you do get the sense that there's still some push and pull on being a socialist, being an anti-capitalist organization within the Green Party. I came to the Green Party. Now, I had done some coalition work with them and met some awesome people that I really liked working with. So they kind of brought me in through that coalition work. But I really said, okay, I'll be a Green when I heard about the eco-socialist plank and that there were Greens opposing, openly opposing capitalism. Where do you see that at maybe, and you can break it up if you'd like, because I know there can be differences, what's going on at a national level and what's going on at a local level. How do you see it from either one of those perspectives or both?
Well, I think that, you know, with socialism, I had read a couple of, you know, manifestos, and it's so similar. I mean, you know, ending systemic racism, you know, climate justice, you know, getting the money out of the 1%'s hands and, you know, giving it back to the people. I think, and I mean, it's really not a surprise, and it's actually quite refreshing that the young Greens of the U.S. Are kind of, you know, identifying more, you know, eco-socialism and not being afraid to call themselves that. Socialism is not a dirty word. Communism is not a dirty word. And, you know, the capitalism, you know, just it preys on the public. You know, it isn't, it's a misconception that there needs to be that type of capitalistic success. The economy should not be up and down. It should be more lateral. And I'm not sure why people aren't grasping that. And as far as paying taxes, the rich, they're on the low end right now. Decades ago, after World War II, the rich were paying much higher taxes. So what's going on? Why is it such a shock now that there are people pushing to tax the rich more? And I don't know if I answered your question the right way. I apologize.
It's okay. I guess on a local level, dealing with the establishment doesn't help. And you did have some candidates out of Connecticut, and I'm not overly familiar with it, but that ran and won with Green and Democratic Party support.
Yes.
And it got talked about a little bit over here in Jersey. I heard people leading up to the convention saying, you know, why don't they come speak? And I kind of said, nah, that's all right.
Nah, I mean, I'm good, right? Yeah.
And the truth is, Cora, I never met these people. I don't know who they are, and they could be the most wonderful people in the world. I just heard Democrats, and I start cringing, and I don't want to.
Sure.
So what? Let me ask you. I mean, there's got to be some positives and negatives, right? Things are not black and white. It's a discussion that we can have. Mm-hmm. What do you see as maybe a negative and a positive, and what direction are you guys going in after these electoral victories, at least?
Well, see, here's the thing. We are divided up by chapters. So I believe the chapter you may be talking about is the Waterford chapter.
Okay.
And they had a big success, if you want to call it that, in 2017. They managed to elect a full slate. I think it was four or five. And I think one candidate got elected as a Green alone, although that person did leave the Green Party after getting elected and is now running as a Democrat. Mm. That's another thing that we have an issue with, people using our available ballot lines as a stepladder to bigger and better things. That's another
somewhat flattering though, right?
Yeah, right.
And they had to bullshit their way past you.
Yeah, like a test run. But no, as far as cross endorsement goes, I don't know. In 2016, with Bernie supporters and everything, you know, people were throwing around this hashtag, green is the new blue. I absolutely disagree. I tried to, invent my own hashtag, which didn't go anywhere. Green has always been green. But I mean, as long as you have Democrat in there, is a victory really a victory? Because, you know, once the person gets into office, are they going to shift over and adopt more mainstream views? Are they going to be seduced into that? Are they going to be bullied into that? We had a candidate who was cross-endorsed in 2016 for state rep, who the Democrats really didn't want her supporting or talking about Jill Stein much. They were kind of suspicious of her support of Jill Stein, which I thought was complete baloney, bull.
Suspicious of what?
No, they didn't like what they were hearing, and they saw her as a threat, and they didn't think it would look good.
Sounds like she was doing an awesome job.
Yeah, they didn't think it would look good because they were, you know, big Hillary proponents.
Right.
And here comes our state rep candidate, all jazzed about Jill Stein, and they're trying to stifle that.
I'd like to jump in because I see so many similarities between, you know, people that want to stay away from Democrats and the situations that you're describing. It speaks to overall kind of mindset of people that want to work, you know, kind of half and half and stuff, you know, is that they don't want to be mean to them and they don't want to tell them to, you know, all right, but we're Greens, kiss my ass. Like, I don't have to support who you want for president just because you're a Democrat. You're not entitled to our support. As a matter of fact, you're a rival organization. Why would we expect anybody from the Green Party to give the Democratic Party candidates a support? Of course she's going to get Jill Stein. But I think there's people that don't want to be that mean. That don't want. They want to be nice, and they want to talk to people, and they want to see them in the supermarket and say hi. and you know, that's not gonna. But that's not gonna fix white supremacy. That's not gonna fix capitalism. You know, we have to take on the establishment if we want to be taken seriously.
I mean, I seriously don't believe in Democratic Party reform. Right. It's been tried, you know, time and time again. Jill Stein called it, you know, the Democratic Party kill switch. There's videos of her interviews. You think of, you know, Dennis Kucinich, Jesse Jackson. I mean, there are examples. I understand that, you know, yes, we want to win, you know, we want to get the votes. But if people are voting on the Democratic line and not on the green line, then again, it's not a victory. And a lot of stuff that's holding us back, ballot access is one of those big issues. When people say, oh, you know, the Green Party's not getting noticed and they're not doing anything. Well, that's because behind the scenes, we're fighting ridiculous, arbitrary rules. I mean, also think about, free and open debates. In 2017, our chapter put a lot of energy into fighting for an unaffiliated candidate's right to debate. He was running for mayor, and he got closed out of a debate for ridiculous reasons.
Right.
So, you put all of those things together. Yeah, we're going to have a little bit of a hard time getting noticed. And the biggest thing is money. We don't take any corporate donations. So, we're not going to have, Budweiser and Bud Girls in a beer tent at a debate, because that's not what we believe in.
And that's so important, especially for Bernie supporters who may have dissipated into the ether or decided to work with the Democratic Party. That just going back to everything that Bernie kind of stood against, which a big part, and people make an issue out of the socialism. He wasn't the greatest socialist in the whole world. I don't think he was exactly giving us analysis of dialectic materialism. You know, he was really against money in politics. And all these people are just right back to the usual game, raising money for this corporate Democrat or that corporate Democrat. And the reason why I came to the Greens is because the party as a principle doesn't take that kind of money. We're running a little short on time. I don't think we got to everything we were supposed to talk about, but you yourself, you won't be running as a Democrat. You'll be running as a Green.
Oh, no, I'm running as a Green.
You are running as a Green. What are you running for?
I am running for state senate, District 27.
Go.
Yes, running as a Green, and also, you can go to ctgreenparty.org and find a full slate of candidates, and there'll be more to come because our filing deadline is at the end of the summer.
Yes.
We have a couple people seeking ballot access, so their signatures will be due in the summer as well. And I wish you luck with your ballot access. I took a look at your congressional candidates page, mm-hmm. Diane Moxley. She is fantastic.
She's awesome. And we're actually, I'll spill the beans a little bit here, because Diane will be on the live stream at New Jersey Revolution Radio on our Facebook page. And we'll be, going live with Diane Wednesday night at 8:00. So
that
thanks for mentioning
awesome.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. She is amazing. I really love what she talks about it. And one thing that she brought up that not a lot of candidates bring up is our refugee crisis. And I really appreciated her views on that.
Diane is the
real
deal.
You don't hear too many people talk about that.
No, she's been to Palestine. She has went to Standing Rock, and she's been on the ground for a lot of activist stuff. She's the real deal, and we appreciate it, and we really appreciate you. Before we say goodbye, is there anything else that people can visit to find out more about Connecticut Greens or get in touch with you about supporting your national work? How can people reach you?
Well, you could always, again, go to ctgreenparty.org. You'll find a link to our Facebook and our Twitter. If you want to reach me, it would be Cora Santaguida green election page. And the crazy thing with that is, I guess I've changed the name of the page too many times for Facebook. Again, this is my sixth time running for office. I'm kind of a veteran with this now.
Mm-hmm.
So Facebook's kind of like enough, but you can find me up there. But yeah, you can find the whole list of candidates on our website.
I'll try to put those out on our social media as well here at www.njrevolutionradio.com. This will go up. Is there any last things you wanted to say before we close it out?
Not at all. I think I've been talking so much, but thank you. Oh my goodness.
It is great. You're doing great work. We really appreciate everything. And if you want to pop back in and talk again down the road, you're more than welcome. If you want to check back in a little bit into the campaign and let us know how it's going, or if you ever take a ride down the, you know, down the Merritt Parkway over to, you know, North Jersey someplace, maybe we could sit and talk live sometime.
That would be fantastic. And best of luck to you guys. You guys are doing amazing things.
All right. Thanks a lot, Cora.
All right. Thank you.